We're at Fairhope High School in Fairhope, Alabama. Senior Bowl coverage continues on Jaguars.com with South Team Practice. Welcome into Jaguars.com Live, presented by Everbank. J.P. Shadrick with Jaguars.com senior writer John Osier. Here we are again.
We're
John.
In Alabama, baby.
3 years in a row.
Can't get around it. Well, yeah, two for me, but yeah. As a concept for us, we're here 3 years in a row.
Three straight years, and it begins essentially today, the first team practice for both sides. North team practicing at Ladd Peebles Stadium in Mobile, and as is tradition, the South team comes over to Fairhope the first day on the field to see the folks over here in Baldwin County. Good crowd is out. I believe it's the most amount of scouts, personnel folks that we've seen ringing the field here at South practice in a number of years.
Yeah, I guess. I mean, it's usually I'd say it's about the same number. I mean, it's always a deal once you get over to the stadium, Ladd Peebles, they sort of spread out a little bit. But, you know, it's always a big deal. This is the first step of the NFL offseason calendar, and it really is a chance for the assistants, everybody involved in the staff, to see these guys on the field. So it's a convention, and they're convening.
They are convening. Dave Caldwell convened with the Jacksonville media today before practice here at Fairhope High School. He does it each and every year here. What stood out about Dave today?
Well, he talked a lot about what they get out of this game, which is what most people who watch us sort of always realize. It's a great chance for them to get to know on a very, I say personal, but intimate level, the 55 guys in the South team. And it really helps the Jaguars staff not have to double back on these guys. It's a huge time save for the scouts, for the personnel people who would normally try to spend time getting to know the 55 guys who are here. They don't have to do that. I thought it was interesting that Dave said, and has said the last couple of times he's talked about the Senior Bowl, Telvin Smith and Aaron Colvin probably wouldn't have been as easy a choice 2 years ago.
That's right.
Had they not had those guys at this game. Telvin had some off-field stuff coming into the draft. Aaron had the knee, and it was with confidence that they were able to take those guys. And I think that does help. You have a mental image in your head of having been around the guy for a week. You maybe have a little better feel. Yeah. These guys will fit into what we're doing. So that's the benefit of it. It doesn't make what you have to do to get here, which is lose, any better.
That's right.
And it doesn't make it any more, hey, let's not be here next year. But if you're going to be in this situation, if you're going to be 5-11, get here and get some benefit out of it.
And that's what the Jags have tried to do the last couple of years. They'll try to do that again right here. We'll just take a look at what's going on right now. We'll have Mike DeRocco of ESPN.com coming up with us in just a moment as well to visit here. He's here in Mobile and arrived here yesterday.
Sure.
We'll get his thoughts
all D-Rock
about the week so far. Offense, defensive line to the far left. You got linebackers and running backs over
yes.
on the far right. And the wide receivers, cornerbacks on the near side in front of us, and quarterbacks, of course, on the far side in the middle of the field. So,
and at some point, they'll break into pure pass rushing over here, which is always an interesting time. When they start going one-on-one pass rush against offensive linemen, that's a big deal. Scouts use a crowd around that. It appears to be a pretty good South roster overall and a very good South roster for the defensive front as well as the linebackers. So those are kind of areas to watch today as we start going forward.
Yep, and we'll show you the remaining parts of practice today, including the 7-on-7, and as you said, the pass pro and pass rush drills and the full team. They have 18 plays on the schedule today on the script. First and second down scenarios today in full 11-on-11. We'll show that to you live coming up. Always fun.
And you know we're in Alabama when you see Nick Saban come to practice.
Right? It was surprising because it didn't quite make a scene yet. He usually drives in front of the stands. It's over in the far left corner, and he snuck on the sideline in front of the scouts. So the fans on this side didn't get a chance to really see a lot of him yet. But
there's a little bit of a buzz. And, you know, lady sitting next to me asked if Nick Saban was here. Oh there he is. And I asked if he had walked on water to get in. She didn't find that very funny, JP.
I guess not.
That kind of joke doesn't fly around these parts.
You probably don't find that funny. It's a long way down the stairs,
really,
John.
Really
remember
is.
That.
So that's my Alabama joke for the for the week.
Let's just keep it at the only joke. How about that? So you're looking live at drills here at the Senior Bowl practice. We will have coverage throughout the week here on Jaguars.com. Tomorrow we'll be live at Ladd Peebles Stadium for more practices, so join us throughout the week. Our coverage continues from Mobile, Alabama. Let's welcome in.
Oh, let's do.
From ESPN.com, Mike DeRocco, who joins us now on set. He covers the Jaguars each and every day and is here in Mobile, has joined us here on the Fairhope High School home stands. Are you going to stand up on the top step?
Okay. I'll stand right here.
Why don't you stand up there for us, Mike?
Yeah, try and do that. Lower the camera down a little.
What's up, D-Rock? So you got here yesterday, right?
Sure
this is always an interesting event. The entire NFL comes to small Mobile, Alabama. They've done it for years and years and years, and it just keeps getting bigger and bigger, it seems.
Yeah, now, I obviously have been here the last 3 years based on the fact that the Jags have been here the last 3 years. This, to me, looks like the biggest group that I can remember out of those 3 years of scouts and whatever. I mean, it's 2-3 deep all the way around, and it wasn't like that. This reminds me of the Tebow year that I came, in 2010. But, yeah, I mean, it's huge. And as you can see, everybody's here, and there's some good one-on-one stuff going on that you guys were just talking about over there. So, yeah, I mean, it's a good week for NFL scouts and personnel people.
It's always back to Tebow with you, isn't it?
It sure is.
It's like your constant point of reference.
Yep. That's all right. I got, John.
All right, here we go.
That's all I got.
So, you were around Dave this morning as well. Dave Caldwell, general manager, spoke to the media, the Jacksonville media today before practice. The interesting part that John was talking about a while ago was that the players that they got out of here, they may not have had such a clear vision of unless they were coaching this game and getting a chance to really interact with those guys.
Yeah, I mean, I think John mentioned Telvin Smith and Aaron Colvin. I guess they only had really one day with Aaron Colvin, before he blew out his ACL. So, and, you know, Dave was talking about it. This week helps you eliminate guys just as much as it helps you figure out guys you want to draft, because you get to spend so much time with them. You get to understand how they are in the meeting room, how they take coaching, you know, and then you just get to know them a little bit to figure out if they're going to fit into your culture. And, you know, they did a good job finding some later round guys. I guess fourth round's late. I don't know. I wouldn't call fourth round late. But certainly Aaron Colvin was a guy that many people thought would go in the second round.
Mm-hmm.
And he ended up going in the fourth because of the knee, and land Telvin Smith in the fifth because of the questions of some character issues up there at Florida State. But, you know, those guys have paid off huge for them.
What's your impression as we move forward? We've had the press conferences last week. Everybody knows Todd Walsh is the coordinator. We haven't talked to you in a while, and I haven't talked to you since the end of the season.
Mm-hmm.
Your takeaway from that whole process? Oh, let's ask generally.
Yeah, okay, sure. You know what? I kind of figured when Bob Babich was fired that I think we all thought this was the way the Jags were leaning, was to promote Todd Walsh. And that makes sense because he understands the system. He's been with Gus for a while.
Mm-hmm.
He knows what Gus wants. He's helped build that system in Seattle to, you know, obviously the huge success that it's had in Seattle. So it doesn't make it didn't surprise me at all. The thing of it is, too, is that just
it's
because
it's raining, D-Rock. I don't know if it's reached you down.
It has not got to me yet.
It's raining.
I see Dave is making sure the camera gets dry or stays dry. But, you know, the interesting thing to me is, you know, I know that the defensive line maybe took a step back a little bit this year. But because of some injuries, honestly, I think is the biggest reason. But I did like what I heard from Todd Walsh. I get the feeling that he's going to be significantly more, I guess, aggressive than maybe Bob Babich was. And I think that's a good thing. I think players like to play that way. And when you've got guys, young guys like a Fowler, that are really itching to get on there, on the field and get to work, and to make big plays like he did at Florida, I think that's a good thing. I think the players are going to like playing for him as a coordinator.
It was interesting. I talked to Gus this morning about that same concept, and he was very careful to say that, yes, Todd is aggressive-minded, I guess, if you will.
Oh, thank you.
He also said that doesn't always mean blitzing. And
correct.
A lot of times it means playing closer press coverage. It means the mindset. It means some more games up front. So I think when fans hear aggressive, they automatically assume that means they're going to blitz 35% of the time or just go after it. And I don't think that's what it's going to mean to Todd Walsh and Gus Bradley. But, you know, I'm with you. I think this was the way they were planning, maybe not planning to go, but it was going to be hard to knock them off this route.
Right.
But I think Todd certainly brings that attention to detail and that mindset that you want out of a coordinator.
Yeah, well, and let's be honest. If you're Gus Bradley and you know that 2016 is sort of a make or break for mm-hmm. you, are you going to feel more comfortable turning over the defense, which is the thing that's holding back, holding the franchise back right now? You're going to be more comfortable turning that over to a guy that you've been around for more than 20 years, that
right.
you coached with in the last several spots, that understands it inside and out?
Right.
Or a guy that you bring in from the outside who is going to have to learn your defense? You
know, I think inside-out thing is what really appealed to not only Gus but Dave. I've heard from several coaches, Todd and Gus really believe in the same thing mm-hmm. for a long, and it was built through them, so to speak. Bob Babich had not worked in this system before he got this job, so there's a feeling that with Todd and Gus coming from the same place and maybe seeing some of the elements go in Seattle together, that there won't be, I don't think there was a whole lot of miscommunication between Gus and Bob, but it certainly seems like the wavelength is very, very in sync between these two.
Right. Well, and I'll say this. I thought there was a lot of miscommunication from Bob or the sideline to what happened on the field a lot of times, because, you know, Gus talked about that all year.
Right.
You know, and Dan Scuda told me when I was interviewing him in the locker room, I want to say week 13, week 14, that there were communications issues that were happening on the field
right.
that he thought would have been beyond, they would have been beyond by that point, and they should have been beyond by
right.
that point. So I do think, like you said, that this is probably the best thing in terms of continuity as
right.
well. And you know, who knows? He may be a terrible coordinator. We
sure.
don't know. I mean, we don't know what's going to happen. You know, there were a lot of people who didn't like the Greg Olsen hire last
right.
year. Now, I mean, I don't think anyone's complaining about it now.
Exactly. So it's tough, and it does eventually come back to players being on the field, which is what they've got to address in the offseason. So.
Jaguars.com Live presented by EverBank. Let's sit down, guys, and watch a little bit of practice here in the rain in Fairhope, Alabama, live on Jaguars.com. Glad you're with us today. J.P. Shadrick, John Osier, and Mike DiRocco, 9-on-7 drills over on the far left side right now, and some cornerback wide receiver stuff in the middle of the field, and then full team drills, about 18 snaps today on the schedule here at South practice at the Senior Bowl. The rain doesn't dampen a thing out here. And, you know, this is an interesting thing. We've talked defense so far already. We haven't had a peep about the Jaguars offense yet. You know, that's a pretty good feeling around here.
Yeah, I don't think Greg Olsen needs to show up on the first 2 days of the draft, because I don't think they're taking an offensive guy at all. He can just go to the beach, spend some time with the wife and kids, do whatever, just show up for day three. Maybe we'll get you a seventh or sixth round guy. But no, I mean, obviously the Jags offense needs some help in certain areas. We can point to the offensive line where they really need some work at a couple of spots. But yeah, I mean, I think if you're the Jaguars, you're extremely happy with what you saw out of Blake Bortles in his second year. There's a lot of things he has to work on. I saw John's story, I think, this morning from Greg Olsen.
Pretty well written, too.
It really
yeah.
was. I mean, I like weak in the knees after
sure,
I read
yeah.
it. But I mean, he's right. I mean, Blake's got to cut down on the interceptions. He's got to increase that completion percentage. And there was something that he talked about at his end of the season news conference about the chart that Nate Hackett has, where it's 80-60-40. 80% completions on the short passes, 60% completion on, like, the medium, intermediate, you know, completion passes and stuff like that, that should be, you know, 8, 10, 12, 15 yards. It should be pretty darn easy to complete. And then on your shots down the field, 40% completion. Now, obviously, Blake was way ahead on the shots, a little behind on the others, so that's where he's got to get better. And that goes, you know, people jumped on me when I wrote that story, like, well, how about if he just cuts down interceptions? Well, that's what's going to happen if he fixes the completion percentage there. So,
well, I think even beyond that, Mike, you know, in the last 4 or 5 weeks, I wrote this a lot. It's got to become a more efficient offense in terms of when he throws short and when they run, because I think that's what led late in the season to it being so glaring that they were having trouble picking up third downs. And they had such trouble in the first half of games getting going because everything was deep shots. So I think they know they have to be able to run better on the interior of the line of scrimmage, and they must be able to be more efficient in the passing game. It can't be all deep shots. And I think they started saying that a lot more at the end of the season.
Yeah, and you mentioned third downs. They were 31st, I believe, in the NFL in third down completion percentage, and you cannot be a good offense and do that. You just can't. I mean, no matter how – I think, and we saw it, no matter how good Blake was throwing ball downfield,
right.
no matter how good – Allen Robinson was and making fantastic, spectacular acrobatic catches, you have to be efficient on third down. And I think if they were better on third down, then we wouldn't have had to see them rally from some big deficits right. in the second half.
And better on third down, and Olsen touched on this a little bit, means getting better on first and second. And that's where they really – it all sort of ties together. But the interior of the offensive line, if they find a guard who can play, if they think they can get somebody, I wouldn't be surprised if they take that second, third round, maybe go that route, maybe in free agency. But they have to be able to run the ball inside.
Yeah, and I thought it was interesting. I think it was Dave at his end of the season news conference. He talked about – someone asked him about center, and he talked about, well, you know, A.J. Cann can snap, and we've got Blanco there, and Linder can probably snap too. So it looks like they feel like they've got some guys there that they can move around. And it wouldn't surprise me if you've got Cann at right guard, Linder at left guard, you know, to kind of solidify that spot on the left side next to Luke Jokel. But then you're right, they still got to figure out what they're going to do at center. But they do need help on the interior.
Yeah.
Aside from that last game, Jokel had played pretty solid football.
Yeah, and I think he's okay. I don't think he's going to be great there. But they're not – they think they can win with that. But I don't think they can win with the interior the way it is right now. That's got to improve.
Absolutely. Yeah, I mean – Jokel's an average left tackle in the NFL, and you can win with that. I mean,
right now you can.
Yeah,
sure.
You look at the Patriots last year. Nate Solder's not anything spectacular, maybe a little bit above average. You can win a Super Bowl if you've got the quarterback and the players, but you're right. They got to start getting better along the interior, and I think, you know, this is going to be an offseason that's big for Zane Beatles, because if he's not able to get it done, then we're going to see A.J. Cann. I think that's what's going to happen anyway, but certainly if you're Zane Beatles, you got to think, I've got to get going this offseason because I may end up losing my job.
Jaguars.com Live presented by Everbank, J.P. Shadrick, John Osier, and ESPN.com's Mike DiRocco. We're live at South Team Practice, and they're about to begin team drills, 11-on-11. I know you're excited about this, D-Rock, the 11-on-11 coming up. Let's flip it back over to defense. That's the big need part of this team for the Jags right now. You know, you can talk about pass rushes. You can talk about back-end free safety types. You can talk about all of the above, really. You got to find some guys who can contribute pretty quick, either free agency or the draft, and some depth to go behind those guys, too.
Yeah, look, if I'm Dave Caldwell, what I tell my scouting staff is find me guys that can do two things, that can run, because we don't have a lot of guys in the middle of that defense that can run, and guys that make plays. And I don't care what position they play. Find me guys that can make plays. Because I think we can all agree, you look at the defense, one of its biggest issues over the past 3 years, there's not a lot of speed there. It's getting better. Obviously, Talvin Smith adds a huge element there. But it's also a lack of big plays being made. Whether that's as a pass rusher, whether that's in the back end with an interception, there's just 26 interceptions over the last 3 years, last in the NFL. Find me somebody, if I'm Dave Caldwell, I say, find me someone that can make plays.
Yeah, I might tell him to find a guy who can rush the passer, too.
That includes that. You know what I'm saying? I mean, that includes that. Find me someone that can make a play, whether it's a sack, whether it's a strip fumble. Look, there were some – I mean, Cyprian made a great play in the Buffalo game where he forced LeSean McCoy to fumble near the goal line. Find me guys that do that more than two or three times in a three-year span. Find me a guy that can do that three or four times a year. That's what I want if I'm Dave Caldwell. And that might mean taking a guy who's not – look, Telvin Smith, not a prototypical linebacker, but he can run. That might be a guy out here, the kid from LSU, the outside linebacker from LSU.
Deion Jones.
Thank you. He's a little bit undersized. I think he's only like 225, 227 pounds, which is still bigger than Telvin Smith, but he can run. I was watching him earlier. He can run. So guys like that, find me guys that make plays and they can run, and that will make the defense better.
I'd like to point out that I didn't have to refer to my notes on that Deion Jones. You notice that, JP?
That's a great pull job.
I was impressed.
Right, yeah.
I've been watching, by the way.
Didn't even open it up.
The pass rusher, the end from BYU, Bronson Kafusi. And I've been really, really impressed with what I've seen. I think he's a guy that the Jaguars may have their eye on as well. 6'6", I think 275, 280. You know, played in the 3-4, but I guess he can move around and play some different spots in the 4-3. So really intrigued by him. I'm going to be writing about him after the practice is done. So that's another guy. But he's probably not a prototypical Leo. He doesn't fit what they probably want in the Leo. But
yeah, I'm not sure that's as much of a – I think this team right now has the mindset, we need to find guys who can rush the passer. We feel like they can fit into this scheme. And they're so focused right now, as they should be, on we have to get better on third down. And when you get into that situation, you can move guys around on third down. It doesn't have to be a pure Leo who lines up way wide on first, second, and third down. They feel like they can move Fowler around, and they were okay on first and second down. So I think if they can find guys they feel like they can put their hand on the ground and rush the passer, I don't know that it has to be that pure Leo fit that you're talking about. It would help.
Right.
But I think it's be that fit.
Yeah.
Another guy that's going to be interesting to watch is Noah Spence from Eastern Kentucky,
yeah,
who started off at Ohio State and might be the best pure pass rusher here. Had a lot of off-field issues, which is why he wound up at Eastern Kentucky. But
drug test, I think two or three drug tests, and got banned from the Big Ten.
Right.
So that's one of those character guys we were talking about earlier, guys that maybe you can snag in a later round.
Yeah, and I don't think he's going to be available in a later round. The question will be, is he worth the choice at two? Is he even there at two? But he's a guy to watch this week without question.
Yeah, he's a big-time pass rusher. Double-digit sacks, I believe, at Ohio State. Double-digit sacks this past year at Eastern Kentucky. Have played, I think, two really, really good games when they played Kentucky and NC State. So he didn't just do it at the FCS level. He did it against some big schools. Now, depends on how you want to list Kentucky, I suppose. I don't know if Ryan Robinson is listening to this, but if he is, sorry, Ryan.
Sorry about it.
But nothing we can do about that. But, yeah, it's interesting to me just to see some of these guys. This will be the best competition that they'll have faced all year. And it's interesting to see how they're going to respond.
We've just now moved over to this is the fourth period of practice. The sixth period of practice. 7-on-7 drills and a 1-on-1 pass protection and pass rush. So on the far left side, and then the 7-on-7 out in the middle.
An intriguing drill to watch, too, with the pass rushes here. Obviously, where is Kafusio? Kafusio hasn't gone yet. I'm really eager to see. There's Kafusio and Spence right there on the bottom left. And we'll get a chance to see those guys in a little bit.
Always fun here, Johnny, with the crowd has now shifted down to the left side of the field here around that drill. That's the way that works here.
Yeah, and Jaguars defensive coordinator Todd Walsh, he's running that drill, but watching the defensive linemen. It's one of the marquee things, the Senior Bowl. I can remember, 20 years ago, must have been 20, watching Jimmy Johnson go nuts over a defensive tackle named Daryl Gardner. And Daryl Gardner that year was from Baylor, and the star of the Senior Bowl. You remember watching Jimmy Johnson just go nuts for him, and sure enough, he drafted him in the first round later on that year. So it's the kind of thing that can make a guy stand out, and it's the kind of drill the Senior Bowl is really made for, because you can this defensive end win against a left tackle who clearly is not the level of player he's going to play at the next level, but they need to at least be able to beat this level player if they're going to have a chance at the next level.
If I remember correctly, isn't this the drill Tony Boselli hates, too, because he's always talking about how unfair it is for the offensive lineman, because you never, especially
right,
as an interior guy, you never have to block in space like this.
Right.
But it is a good barometer of how well the offensive lineman can move, their strength, their set. So it's one of the most watched, as you can see, everybody out here, is like you said, on down this end. It's one of the most watched drills of camp, along with sort of the one-on-ones with the corners and the receivers.
Well, it's a rare thing. These guys may never really get this opportunity again, meaning the scouts, to watch most of these guys in this situation. So it's one that they try to take advantage of.
Yeah, because they had the Shrine game, last week, and the practices leading up to that, and not
right,
many of these guys were over there. So this group of players, you're right, in a team situation,
right,
you won't see this again, certainly not at the combine.
And people often ask, what's the difference in the Senior Bowl and, say, an NFL practice or a regular college practice? Well, in a normal week of college or NFL, you wouldn't see them doing one-on-one pass rush in this way. You see more game prep, and they're preparing for the next week's game. There's game playing and whatnot. And Gus basically said, yeah, you have to structure the Senior Bowl practices in a way. It's not necessarily trying to prepare and go in the game. You want to, but scouts, these coaches, they want to see these guys doing certain things. So it's not as much practice as it is a showcase.
Last couple of minutes
here, your guy,
Mike DeRocco. What do you think?
I think there was a little bit of a false start issue with one of those. I think that they might want to do that again.
But, in your story tomorrow, that'll be a sack.
He did kind of blow by the kid from Baylor, who had really, in some of the other one-on-ones, had really stoned a bunch of guys. See, I think they're going to go again right here.
Yeah, you want to include this one, though. Nope. That won't make ESPN.com tomorrow.
You got back there a little bit. I like that kid. He's an effort kid, too. And the kid from Baylor has been pretty good in some of these other one-on-ones, the offensive lineman there. He stoned a bunch of guys earlier.
JP's not listening to you. He's been watching the Alabama quarterback all day. I'll be honest with you.
JP's waiting on? Right. JP's waiting on the king to arrive.
Yeah.
And we're not. When is that happening?
Oh, he's here.
He's here already?
He snuck in.
Where is he?
He's around.
I can't imagine he's around. There's Alabama people right down here. They would all be where the king is.
He snuck into that white SUV over there and went straight to the field.
Did
JP's
really?
Saban app just updated, so he's way ahead of you on this.
Is that like
the
Krispy Kreme app? Yeah. Hot light, Saban's here.
Yeah, great. It's always a scene here when he arrives. Not quite the one today, but there is a little bit of a buzz in the room. Last couple minutes with you, D-Rock, before we get you out of here, we'll let you watch the team drill.
I can see up here because if I'm standing on the field, I can't see. I'm too small. This is a better view. I'm going to stay here.
You're cracking jokes on yourself now.
Just walk into somebody's leg. You'll be good.
Yeah, I'll be all right.
Well, stick with us then. That's fine. The pass rush drills, one-on-ones on the offensive line still happening, 7-on-7 on the right as well. And then teamwork coming up here from the South practice at Fairhope High School. We're live on Jaguars.com, Jaguars.com Live, presented by Everbank, J.P. Shadrick, John Osier, and Mike DiRocco of ESPN.com. This whole group will head over to Mobile tomorrow and practice at Ladd Peebles Stadium. We'll carry that for you live as well. And then our coverage for the week will end then. We'll be back in Jacksonville Friday for State of the Franchise coverage. You'll be back for that, right, D-Rock?
Yep. I'm hitting the road on look, there's Baselli. See the guy in the Baselli jersey? I think he's got teal socks on, too. I swear.
It is a Baselli jersey.
It is. It's an old one, too.
All right.
That's like O'Shara Baselli.
I'm surprised because Baselli's got most of those at his house. So I'm surprised.
He autographed them himself and everything.
Yeah, exactly. Right.
That'll be interesting to get back Friday for all that. Will all be done by then. And then, hey, you can look forward to the off-the-field stuff in the off-season coming. We'll get back to this, of course, come up in a moment. But just a quick thought on Friday. What do you expect Friday?
I'm eager to see what the plans are. I assume we're going to get some artist renderings that are pretty close to what it's going to look like when it's done for the indoor practice facility, the amphitheater, and the club seat renovations. So I'm really eager to look at that. And I know that Forbes, I guess, recently released a list, or they updated their list. Jaguars worth $1.48 billion. So I think people should be excited about the fact that this franchise is gaining value. I mean, that's double what he paid for it, I think, in 2012, mm-hmm. right? He's made like $77 million, so it's essentially double what he paid for it. And Forbes listed Schott as owning worth, I think, $5.6 billion. That's his net worth. So eager to see what he's... His visions are always fantastic. I think we can agree with that after seeing the shipyards project that he envisioned. I'm eager to see what these are going to look like, the IPF and the amphitheater, and get an idea of how soon we're going to see those things ready. You know, that'll be fun.
I've heard they're not uncool.
Yeah. Oh, he's seen them.
Well, no.
He's known as seen them, hasn't he?
But it's like anything Schott has to do with. My understanding is they're when people see them, there will be the expected wow factor, without question.
That surprises me not a bit. I don't think he does anything where people don't go, wow.
Now, somebody asked me, it was about a year ago, about indoor facility and this and this. I said, well, when he does it, put it this way. It won't be a square airplane hangar. it's not what he was going to do. And I joke about that, but at a lot of places with an indoor facility, that's what it is. It's an indoor facility with a bubble, and that, and everybody for years talked about a practice bubble. Well, you sort of had to know that when Schott did something like that, it wasn't going to be a bubble in the sense that other people thought of it. It was going to be something different, and I think it'll be interesting to see it on Friday, and it'll be a fun day.
What time does Schott's jet leave to get you guys back there for Friday?
I'm riding the yacht, so I don't know. I'm not sure what you're...
It's going to go all the way down around Miami and come back up that way. Okay, that's cool. I get it.
Jaguars.com Live, presented by Everbank, J.P. Shadrick, John Osier, and Mike DiRocco. Let's wrap it up here now. I know you'll have coverage on ESPN.com coming up of Senior Bowl practices, and you'll be talking to some of the prospects out there today. Again, who are you going to try to catch up with today, D-Rock?
Today's I want to talk to Bronson Kafusi from BYU. That's the guy that I'm writing about today. I am eager tonight to talk to, and I don't know if I'm going to write this, but Jeff Driscoll, Jacoby Brissett, tonight at the media thing. Obviously, those were two guys that were at Florida. I think the local Jacksonville area is intrigued by those guys, obviously, and, you know, both of them went on to have pretty good careers, and, you know, Jeff had a real good career at or 1 year at Louisiana Lafayette. There's little Gronkowski just caught a pass there. Little Gronk. Yeah, those are guys that I'm going to talk to tonight, and I've got some stuff going on later in the week about the safeties and some linebackers as well.
And speaking of Florida, supposedly Antonio Morrison has a chance with a good game today. I mean, with a good week this week to improve his stocks. People who like him, you've seen him fourth, fifth round, but people think he's a guy who can play in this league. So,
and he's a medical marvel, too, because of all the stuff that he's had done with his knee. They didn't think he would be able to play last year, and he played pretty well. And that's another guy that can run. A little undersized to play in the middle at Florida, but he did it. And he's a guy that can run, too. And that's, again, I think if the Jags are, or if I'm in charge of the Jag scouting, I'm like, find guys that can run, and that's one of the guys that I'd put on the list.
Well, that'll do it for our commentary. We will show you the rest of practice here from Fairhope High School. D-Rock, we appreciate your time, man.
Thanks for having me. Always a joy to join Jaguars.com.
We had an umbrella. That helped you, too.
Well, yeah. That's why I'm not leaving.
All right, D-Rock, we appreciate it, buddy.
There he is. Thanks, Mike DiRocco for John Osier and everyone involved. This is J.P. Shadrick. Come on the website a little bit later for Inside the Jaguars, but stay tuned here for the remainder of South Team practice at Fairhope High School.